Welcome to the Chair Yoga Podcast with me, Maria Jones. Knowledge and inspiration for teaching and practicing chair-based yoga.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Chair Yoga Podcast. In today's podcast, we have Kate as our guest from Phoenix Yoga. Kate is a highly experienced yoga teacher working with a Vini Yoga perspective. She founded Phoenix Yoga 14 years ago with her husband and fellow yoga teacher, Mark, who I sometimes attend classes with, and they share what they have learned over the many years of study with their teachers in this tradition. Initially based in Gloucestershire in the UK, they decided to move to the sunnier climes of southwest France 4 years ago with their rescue dog, Brock. Today's subject is about one-to-one chair yoga because Kate works very much on a one-to-one basis. Her experience of working with a wide variety of students and individuals means that she can tailor the approach and their practice to help them towards fulfilling their potential and making positive changes to their quality of life. So because chair yoga is so accessible and so adaptable, she finds that sometimes using chair yoga is an important aspect of her sessions with her students. And we wanted to explore a more personalized approach to chair yoga. So welcome, Kate. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast this week. It is a pleasure to have you here, and it's a pleasure to have a fellow Vini Yoga person. There isn't that many of us out there. Tell us what brought you into this space of teaching yoga and also delivering teacher trainings, because I see that you have a Vini Yoga teacher training coming up, 60-hour foundation course. So tell us about you.
Oh, hi, Maria. Thank you very much for having me on today. I'm delighted to be here to be able to talk about all things Vini Yoga and all things chair yoga. Talk all day. A little bit of background about me. Been practicing yoga for about 20 years now, completely by accident. I was the least likely person you would expect to find on a yoga mat when I started. I'd been dragged into class absolutely kicking and screaming, did not want to go at all, but had been sent on a doctor's recommendation. I'd had an episode of ill health. I'd been well enough in the April that year to run the London Marathon. And by the August, I couldn't walk upstairs on my own. It was a very strange time. And a very forward-thinking doctor said to me, I think you really ought to use yoga as part of your recovery. And I went, in your dreams. And he said, no, I insist. So there I was, dragged off to my local village hall on a cold, damp, dark autumn night, thinking this really isn't going to suit me. I'm not going to like this. And came out at the end of the class thinking, wow, never expected that. And that was the start. I went to class regularly after that. A few years later, thought, just really enjoying this, want to know more. There has to be more than just moving going on. Did a British Wheel of Yoga Foundation course, thought, like this. Was talked into doing a British Wheel teaching diploma afterwards. I had no intention of teaching ever. Not what I was going to be doing. Fast forward 3 years and I've jacked my job in. I'm a full-time yoga teacher. Had no idea how I was going to pay the bills, let alone anything else. The day after I left what my father still refers to as my proper job, I got a phone call from a local nursing home saying, would you come and run some sessions for us? The afternoon, the same day, I got a phone call from the local council saying, will you come and run some sessions in some sheltered accommodation? Okay. And that was kind of the start of my interaction with chair yoga at that point. It had been something I'd used in my practice because I'm not completely physically able. And then suddenly I discovered that it wasn't just me. There were other people who liked using a chair, who found it really helpful. And I was working with people that I'd never anticipated working with. I thought I'd be teaching yoga classes in a village hall like my own teacher had done. And suddenly I'm working with this much broader population. And it was fabulous, just thoroughly enjoyed it. It was interesting, it was challenging. To see the changes that happen is inspiring. And that encouraged me to take more trainings. I did more detailed Vinny Yoga trainings. Since then, have migrated more towards working just on a one-to-one basis. The nature of the clients that I've attracted over the years has meant that it works really well for them to have that individual attention. They're quite often people who wouldn't dream of walking into what they perceive a yoga class to be. It's nice to be able to break down some of those stereotypes and say, actually, you know, we can all do this. This is great for everybody. So that's kind of where I came from into all of this and how the kind of the chair yoga has become basically part of my day-to-day teaching.
I agree with you. And like Stacey said in the previous episode, it's not a lineage, it's not a style. Chair yoga is yoga.
It's just yoga. Absolutely. It's and yoga that is first and foremost.
The main thing that people need to understand that it's yoga. You just use the chair as a prop. And it is a tool for us yoga teacher, but it becomes a tool for our students as well. So tell me the three things you learned, the three things that maybe other yoga teachers would learn from or appreciate.
I think the first one comes back to something you just said, and it's chair yoga is not a lesser approach. It's not something that you start with so you can work up to proper yoga. It is real yoga. So don't apologize for the fact that you teach chair yoga. Be proud of the fact that's what you do. The more we give that attitude out, the more our students absorb it and the more that they get back from doing it. It doesn't feel like a compromise because it absolutely isn't. So I think that's probably my first. My second is be playful. Always be playful. Encourage your students because we don't know what's possible for them. Quite often they don't know what's possible for them. So explore and just have fun with it. Sometimes people just assume they can't do things. I worked with a Parkinson's student, for example, who'd been told by his doctor that this is what he'd got and it was pretty much all downhill from here. And he took to his armchair and he didn't move. He stopped doing all of the things that he normally did. And as a result, started to go downhill. And when you say to him, well, why have you stopped going for walks with the dog? No particular reason. So you can use it to encourage people to do more, to try more, and just see what happens, because you never know. You might just surprise yourself.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing is to set goals. This is a big part of our approach, is that whether it's the practice that you're working with on that day or whether it's a short-term, medium-term, long-term goal, whatever it happens to be, if you've got a goal, you know how to plan the practice, you know what to do with the practice, you know what it's there to achieve, and you can monitor what's going on, you can see what's happening, and you can adjust it if it's not doing what you hoped it would do. So you don't go down a dead end and, oh, that's a shame. Wasted all those hours, weeks. And the student gets what they want out of it. They get what they need. And also from their point of view, they can see their progress. They can see what they've achieved. And the more they can see positive outcomes, whatever they may be, the more likely they are to keep going. And that, you know, once it becomes a habit, you're onto a real winner with it.
When I did my first round, 300-hour Vinny yoga training after the 200-hour that I had done, the yoga therapist used me as a student. Of course, we use each other in those trainings anyway. So my issue was that I had a slight process issue going on. I think I still have it, but it's definitely a lot better. Anyway, after consistent practice, I happened to go to the doctor. And, you know, sometimes they take your height when you go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. I had grown by 1 centimeter. So it was a massive improvement for someone that is not likely to ever grow again, you know, but just by sitting upright. And that was the thing that kept me going. So I can totally concur with the last thing that you said. Set the goals and intentions for your practice, long-term, short-term, or, you know, for the session in itself. And I find that incredible because it is so motivating for the students to know that, one, they're heading in the right direction, and two, they can see improvement, measurable improvement. So it might not be growing by 1 centimeter.
It all counts. Yes. It all makes a difference. And if it gets you on your mat every day, mm-hmm. so much the better. That's the really important
thing. Absolutely. So those are the kind of things. And as you were talking, that's exactly what I was thinking, that I stuck to a practice and I'm still doing pretty much the same thing. I stuck to a practice and I saw something really important happening to me. And I know when I'm not doing it right, because my back starts hurting, my neck starts hurting, and all those things start happening again. And it's consistent practice that creates progress, provided though we have goals and intentions that keep us going. I just love that light bulb moment that I have had while you were talking, which leads us nicely to the third question. Other than the approach of setting goals and intentions, what are the three approaches have been most beneficial in your one-to-one setting?
I think, just going back to something again we've just said, is make it a habit. Find a way, particularly when you're working with people one-to-one, that they do something between their sessions. And the more you can get them to connect to their day-to-day habits, the more likely they are to stick with the practice when they're not seeing you. So for example, if you've got a student who's got stiff ankles and you teach them some ankle mobility work, and then, for example, they sit to shower, they can do their ankle exercises while they're sitting in the shower. Just connecting your practice to your day-to-day habits.
Yeah.
So if you can connect your yoga to something that you already do, it's so much easier to stick with it. Whether you stand on one foot while you're brushing your teeth, whether you sit in the shower and you do your ankle mobility, you do your wrist mobility work while you're under the water, it becomes something you don't have to think about it so much. And the less you make the practice a chore, something that people have to find time to do, the more likely people are to do it. And there's so many elements of chair yoga that you can do through the day. You know, yeah. Sitting at your computer, watching TV. You know, the more we move, the better we feel. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me was one of the big takeouts, is getting people to do a little bit more. And kind of on from that one, the next one is make it fun. It's not fun. People won't do it. If it becomes a chore, people pull back from it, and understandably so. So when you work with students one-to-one, the more relaxed you can be within your sessions, the more, you know, you can laugh at yourself when you're working with them, the more people will open up to you.
Yeah.
And little things come out, and you can tailor the practice then even more to suit their needs. And that, again, is how you start to make real progress. It's the little things that people don't think to tell you beforehand. I had, for example, a student who came to me because she was quite elderly and her daughter thought it would be a good idea. And it took until the third session. She said, you know, the thing I'd really like to be able to do is put my own necklace on. Yeah. Something as simple as that, as being able to reach behind to fasten a necklace on her own, so she didn't have to wait for her daughter to come over if she wanted to wear her jewellery. And those kind of things you can really work on, but nobody's ever going to write that on a health intake form. I'd say the more approachable you are and the more kind of relaxed you are, the more that rubs off on your students.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I think the third one has to be stress balls. This is the answer to everything. Whatever the question, the answer is a stress ball. There are so many things you can do with these. It's probably my most used prop when I work with chair yoga. They are just brilliant. And if I can get it up to the camera, if you can get the ones with the little smiley faces, so much the better. I've got students with Alzheimer's and they love the smiley faces. They're brilliant. If you work with students with tremors, having something to hold in the hand while they practice takes the tremor out. There's just so much you can do with it. And again, if you get the student to take it away, it's a bit like having a fruit pastel. You can't leave it alone once you've got it. And it just sneaks movement into people's day, whether they sit and fiddle with it while they're watching TV, whether they use it at their desk if they're computer-based.
This is so good, because the fall prevention program by the NHS here in Scotland and the rest of the UK shows us ways that incorporate daily movement into improving balance and coordination and walking, etc., etc. So I have no idea why nobody thought about doing the same for the hands and dexterity, because it is a big issue, especially for people who have Alzheimer's. Actually, a lot of people who are older may over time lose touch with their extremities, that includes their fingers, and they stop using them. They stop. That's why knitting is very good. That's why writing is very good. Art and fine motor skills, so that they can keep doing that, so that they can have the capability of putting their jewelry on, doing buttons, tying laces, eating, feeding, cleaning themselves, those sorts of things that we do, the finer dexterity things that keep us independent. And I have no idea why nobody thought of saying, you know, a stress ball, or take a towel and work your hands around the edges of the towel, or things like that, that we seem to incorporate into our classes, but I've just never seen it on a piece of paper on the NHS. That was just a random thought.
So simple, and it's so easy to build into your day, and it makes such a difference. There are so many things that are improved by just simple, little, gentle movements.
And it doesn't have to be anything complicated. We have fall preventions booklets, but we don't have I stopped eating and dressing myself booklets.
Absolutely. It's the activities of day-to-day living that make such a difference to people's quality of life and how they perceive their quality of life. Yes. The more things you can do for yourself, the more independent you are, the better you feel. It's just human nature.
Exactly. And they feel better about themselves. And just like the previous point that you made, it builds confidence into them trying out more things and doing more things. You know, there is a chance that they were able to do it before. Suddenly something happened and they stopped or regressed. And then eventually you come to a halt for certain things that we can reintroduce through the chair yoga practices. For me, chair yoga becomes this gateway to populations that thought they could not do yoga. And also the gateway to teaching more meaningful practices. Without saying that any other style of yoga is less meaningful, I'm just saying that for me, it is a more meaningful practice because I get to speak to people that didn't think were going to do yoga before. I love all those light bulb moments. So I told you the role that chair yoga has played in my teacher training. Like, I thought that was the gateway to teaching meaningful practices and the gateway to providing yoga for people that may have thought it's not for them. But what do you think the role of chair yoga is in a one-to-one setting? How can it be beneficial in that setting?
It's absolutely just another tool in the toolbox. When you are working with someone, if you've got that goal and you know what it is you want to achieve with them, you're always working with people who are time poor. I don't know anybody who's got unlimited time. And you want to get them to their goal the quickest, easiest way you can. And chairs are quite often a fantastic tool for doing that. You can get them to do more. You can get them to work differently. You can get different ranges of movement that you might not otherwise be able to access. It's a superb tool and everybody's got one. So whether you're working on Zoom or you're working face to face, it really doesn't matter. It's not like sitting there with a bolster and saying, well, have you got a bolster lying around? Well, no. And, you know, there's always a chair you can use to hand somewhere and it gives people confidence.
I was going to say a chair and a broomstick sometimes.
Yeah, that there is that option too. But it's just so accessible and it doesn't have that weird factor to it. There's no special technique you need to learn to be able to use a chair in your practice. It's not like when you start working with resistance bands and you have to teach people not to let go of the end and ping themselves. You know, the chair is just simple. It's there. There's no fear factor with it. And it people will try all sorts of things. Yeah. And it's the other thing I've discovered when you work with groups with chairs, people are much more willing to work in a circle and interact. And there's part of that in the one-to-one setting. There's something about being sat with somebody to work face-to-face, absolutely. It just breaks down barriers. So as a tool, I wouldn't be without a chair in my armory. It's something I probably use in almost every session I teach, thinking about it, because if the student's not using it, I'm using it for me. It's part of what I do, and it's part of what allows me to teach full time.
Or it can be a starting point for a lot of the students. So you're sitting there, you're having a discussion, filling in the questionnaire, and you suddenly think, well, let's just start moving a little bit.
Yes, see what happens. There's not that barrier between you. They don't feel like they're under scrutiny. And people are much more natural as a result, and you learn so much more that you can use. So yeah, I would not be without a chair in my practice. My teaching room has an assortment. It's kind of one for every occasion.
Exactly. I agree with that entirely. I think it does bring the barriers down and in a way lowers expectations in a good way, not in a bad way, not about the outcome, but lowers the expectations and removes the tension in a way between you and the student. And for that alone is good, whether your students are perfectly able or not.
Even with students who are super able, there is still a role for a chair in a practice. Yes. It brings another element to what they do, and you can be so creative with it.
Exactly. I mean, people think of less able when they're looking at the chair. And even when it comes to teach trainings, you know, they say you can do it in a chair. Somebody did say the other day, I'm perfectly able. And I remember the answer of the teacher saying, no, everybody has a chair. Let's just do it here.
It brings a different edge. It lets you emphasize different elements. It lets you work in a slightly different way. And again, try something different.
Yes, absolutely. So talking about something different, you have a wonderful 60-hour yoga teacher training. Please tell our audience and the people about your Vini yoga teacher training coming up soon, or about anything else that is coming up.
The teacher training came about because one of the things about Vini yoga, as you know, there's not a lot of Vini yoga teachers out there. There's not a lot of Vini yoga teachings available. And Vini yoga is quite a technical approach in some ways, and the trainings tend to be super long. My first one was 3 years, my second one was 3 years, the latest one I did was another 3 years. And that's great if you've got the time to do that. If you can go to India for 6 weeks at a time, that's great, but not everybody can do that. And if you've already done a teacher training, you don't necessarily need to do all of that. And it's such a brilliant approach. I wanted more people to understand how it could be used, how they could apply it to what they already know, and just tweak what they do a little bit so that they get more from their teaching, they enjoy it more, and their students get better results. And that was the thinking behind doing the 60-hour approach, so that it gives people an introduction to what the Vini yoga approach is about, how we work and why we do that, and how to apply that to what you do, so that when you work one-to-one or you work in a group situation with people that you don't necessarily know so well, that you can respond to what they need. You can sequence effectively, quickly, safely, because it's second nature for you. Yeah. That was where we started with the 60-hour training.
And I must admit that it doesn't matter what, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but it doesn't matter what lineage they have come from, there is a space for the adaptations the Vini yoga approach offers when it comes to the practice of yoga. And in my opinion, there is opportunity to layer elements of all aspects of yoga within the practice and adapt it on all layers of our being. So that's why I get so excited talking about it. And I don't see that many people teaching it, but it doesn't matter what lineage you came from. It can just be incorporated in what you do as a yoga teacher.
Absolutely. I've worked alongside teachers from lots of different lineages over the years, and you can take what you already know and just fine tune it a little. Just little tweaks to how you do things can make a world of difference. And having that deeper understanding about how to modify, how to vary, when you might want to do that, how you might do that, whether you use props, whether you don't use props. The thing I love most about the Vinyasa approach is that it is so logical, that there is a reason for everything that you do. Everything is in the practice for a purpose. There's no kind of fluff with it. And for me, who comes from a corporate background where time was of the essence, never had enough of it, to have a practice that's super efficient and does what it says on the tin, I just absolutely love that. Whatever your background, whatever your history with yoga, there's always something that we can learn from that, both for ourselves and for our students.
Exactly. There is so much opportunity to incorporate it into parts of the practice, not just for your students, but for yourself. And as I said, there is this layering element that comes through breath to movement as a start, breath leading movement, which is quite a lot of what happens when it comes to asana practice in the Vinyasa yoga tradition. But at the same time, there is a purpose. Nobody wants to sit on their mat. Well, they might do.
If you've got the time, it's lovely. But
yeah, exactly.
It's better to do something regularly.
Yeah, better to do something efficient and regularly. And that would be just the most exciting aspect of it, to turn up on the mat for 10 minutes a day and to see the results 2 months down the line, having grown 1 centimeter. Sorry, that's just the previous one.
Absolutely.
All of these things are so lovely to hear. I will add the dates on the actual posts, because the podcast is, of course, evergreen. So the dates may not make sense, but all your details will be there. Hopefully they will be able to find you on your website, which is, can you tell me your website again, please?
It is. We are phoenixyogafrance.com.
Perfect. And that way you can go and find Kate and Mark and learn about all the things that they do, including the wonderful classes that I have attended. And it's just been lovely to meet you. Thank you so much for coming. I'm so grateful for giving me your time, your energy, and your love. And to our listeners, of course, thank you everybody for listening. And I hope you can listen again next week on the Chair Yoga Podcast.